Gary, and it's time to gather around whatever device my voice is emanating from and listen to me have a beer and talk. This is a podcast called I'll Have a Beer and Talk, where I choose a random craft beer and thoroughly enjoy it while I tell you about a couple technology-related stories that you may have missed from the previous week, plus one weird animal story, all the time it takes me to finish that random craft beer. It's a beer show. It's a tech show. It's an attempt at a comedy show. It's my show. Welcome to it. I am very happy to be recording in my secret bunker today. It's over 99 degrees up on the surface in Portland, Oregon, but is a pleasant 70 degrees down here deep underground in the I'll Have a Beer and Talk bunker. Keeps me cool and keeps my beer cache cool. Speaking of beer, let me activate the randomizer. It's a machine I made to randomly select something tasty from that beer cache for me to share with you each week. Well, share my experience with the beer with you. I can't send you a bottle. Or could it? No, it really can't. Anyway, the beer selection result is in. This week, the beer I will be putting into my mouth is Dark Horse Brewing Company's Smells Like a Citra Safety Meeting, an 8.5% Double India Pale Ale. Which is kind of appropriate. I had to give an OSHA safety topic presentation at my day job's monthly all-staff meeting this morning at 8 a.m. So, yeah, I'm tired. Oh, what new can I say about India Pale Ales? I've talked about their origins as a pale ale that got loaded with hops to retain potency during trips from Britain to India during the British colonial period. I've mentioned that the style kickstarted the modern microbrew revolution in the United States. I think I've mentioned that they are the most popular microbrew style in the U.S.? Well, basically, they're better than the domestic yellow fizzy slop you see everywhere. They're pretty easy to find. A lot of them are good, but be aware that they can be very, very hoppy. This one is a double IPA, so you would be correct in assuming that it has double the amount of hoppiness than a regular IPA does. You know, I really do need a little hop face injection, so I am going to switch to the beer mic so I can open her up and drink heartily. Wow, it has a very, very musty, hoppy scent. I don't know if you've ever smelled compressed hop pellets, but that's pretty much what it smells like. And it is it's kind of a dark amber, almost a dark copper with a white head. I don't really know what else to tell you about it until I taste it, so here we go. Wow, again, it is not too horribly hoppy or bitter. It is almost perfectly balanced with a little... like a really nice resiny taste to it. I can still taste the smell of those musty, pure hop concentrations. And I'm really impressed by this. I mean, the resiny aspect reminds me a lot of Pliny the Elder, but it is not so off-putting with the massive hop attack on the tongue. I don't know how they did it. This is great. This first story is close to my heart and possibly all of our hearts, literally. If the flow of oxygen is blocked from getting to heart muscles, a heart attack is the result. The oxygen flow needs to be reestablished quickly, but that can be tricky when oxygenated blood is stopped due to a blockage. But there may be a clever alternative method of delivering oxygen to the heart in emergency situations, if research pans out. According to The Verge, a study was published in Science Advances, a journal that is not about knitting, but is about science advances, detailing experiments involving light-eating bacteria, known as Cynococcus elongatus. To avoid having to mangle that pronunciation again, I will refer to it as Johnny Longtorso, because elongatus. Johnny Longtorso uses light as a fuel to convert carbon dioxide into oxygen. In the study, rats were given heart attacks. Yeah. Then Johnny Longtorso was injected into their hearts. Then light was shown onto those rat hearts. Johnny Longtorso ate the light up, producing oxygen directly in the heart, supplying the necessary oxygen and improving, quote, the heart's overall function. Johnny Longtorso didn't cause the rats' immune systems to kick in either, and even died out in the rats' hearts after giving its oxygen boost. So it works! But not without some drawbacks. Johnny Longtorso needs to be injected directly into the heart. Ow. And in order to get light to Johnny Longtorso, the chest needs to be opened up. So not exactly a simple, quick procedure. Study co-author and chair of the Department of Cardiothoracic Surgery at Stanford University School of Medicine, Joseph Wu, says that the bacteria could be bound to an antibody that targets heart cells, meaning Johnny Longtorso could be injected into a vein and find its way to the heart thanks to those antibodies. But the light issue is a little bit trickier to solve. The researchers are currently trying to figure out how to pass enough light through the skin and the ribs to power up Johnny Longtorso. The team is also working on genetically modifying the bacteria to produce more oxygen and are moving testing on to larger animals like sheep and pigs. If the research continues to be successful, the technique could be used to extend the shelf life of donated organs, keeping them oxygenated until implantation, as well as helping heart attack victims. But so far, this just works in rats with open chests. It doesn't mean refinements will work in humans. Wu made this wonderfully pragmatic statement. Like all basic science studies, it could be something really great or not. If light-eating, oxygen-pooping bacteria could be turned into a reliable emergency heart attack recovery technique in the future, maybe it could be done by a flying drone too! Super future! It might actually happen, because drones are currently being tested as a sort of emergency responder being used to deliver defibrillators in Sweden, according to Gizmodo. Swedish researchers conducted time trials to see who would win in a race to assist someone undergoing a heart attack. An ambulance with a full EMT crew, or a flying drone with a defibrillator. Researchers published their findings in the Journal of the American Medical Association. They kitted out a 12.5-pound, 8-rotor drone with a defibrillator and painted it up to look like a little ambulance with 8 rotors. They then pitted this ambu-drone against a regular ambulance and 18 simulated 911 emergency call responses in Norrtälje municipality near Stockholm. And I apologize to the citizens of Norrtälje for mangling the name of their town. The area was chosen for its large summertime population and its unfortunate reputation for lots of ambulance delays. So, who won the races? The drone. Journeys that took the ambulance 20 minutes took the drone about 4 minutes, and ambulances that took over 20 minutes to arrive at the simulated emergency took the drone about 5 minutes. It does have to be pointed out, though, that the drone cannot use the defibrillator itself. A willing bystander would need to use the device. The researchers would like to do more speed tests, because who wouldn't, with simulated defibrillations done by a willing member of the public and by the ambulance's EMT crew. But I'm pretty sure the skies in the near super future will be full of life-saving and burrito-delivering drones. Something else might be in the skies in the near future. The United States Space Corps! The Verge reports that legislation has been drafted by the U.S. House Armed Services Committee to form the Space Corps, a full-fledged branch of the U.S. military that would deal with all threats to America that come from beyond our atmosphere. In an extremely rare bipartisan draft legislation, the Space Corps would be a, quote, separate military service responsible for national security space programs, for which the Air Force is today responsible. Speaking of the Air Force, it is totally not into this idea. Air Force Chief of Staff General David Goldfein said, "I don't support it at this time," pointing out that the effort in putting the Corps together would detrimentally affect all other projects and missions currently underway. I would say that we keep the dialogue open, but right now I think it would actually move us backwards, he said. The Air Force currently has a Space Command wing that oversees operations taking place in the upper atmosphere. The idea isn't totally without precedent of forming the Space Corps. The Air Force itself was formed out of the U.S. Army Air Corps when it became obvious that the skies were its own unique battlefield. I think forming a specific space-focused branch of the military is a good idea, but I am more partial to calling it Space Patrol, or, dare I say, Starfleet? Hey, have I mentioned that this show is sponsored by a handmade papermaking studio? It's true. If you are curious about the ancient art of papermaking, you should check out this show's sponsor, Pulp & Deckel. Pulp & Deckel is Portland's only community handmade papermaking studio, and its mission is to keep the art of papermaking alive with workshops, demonstrations, and by creating and selling beautiful handmade paper products. Browse the rotating selection of papermaking workshops, check out membership options, inquire about custom orders, take an online recycled papermaking class, and check out all the amazing things we do with the art of papermaking by visiting pulpanddeckle.com. That is pulpanddeckle.com. If you by any chance do check out pulpanddeckle.com and order something or even sign up for a class, mention I'll have a beer and talk and we might give you something special. Quick, look into the daytime sky. See that bright glowing ball of continuous nuclear fusion? Don't stare directly at it now, but that thing is called the sun. I'm sure you already knew that, but did you also know that it's highly likely that the sun used to have a twin? It just might be true, and I read about the research on Engadget. Scientists Sarah Sadovoy and Stephen Stoller have been studying the Perseus Molecular Cloud, which is considered a star nursery. It is composed of over 10,000 solar masses of gas and dust. For reference, one solar mass is the mass of our sun, which is 1.989 times 10 to the 30th power kilograms. So way more gas than is caused by all the Taco Bells ever. Sorry, not sorry. Anyway, it is generally agreed upon that stars usually form either as individuals or as binary pairs. Sadovoy and Stoller pored over data from surveys of the Perseus Cloud to determine the ratio of single newborn stars to binary newborn stars. And you won't believe what happened next! Basically, the data suggests that all stars form as wide binaries, with the distance between the pairs at about 500 astronomical units, which are also known as AUs. An AU, if you didn't know, is roughly the average distance between our sun and our home planet Earth, which is 1 sextillion, 4 quintillion, 9 quadrillion, 5 trillion, 9 billion, 7,870,700 meters. So pretty big. After about the first million years of their life, the binaries either contract their distance, one example is Alpha Centauri, where the gap between the stars is 18 AUs, or the new binaries break up and never cross paths again, much like Noel and Liam Gallagher of Oasis. If you are a conspiracy buff, you just might be hopping up and down in joy because Sadovoy and Stoller's findings confirm the existence of our sun's evil twin, Nemesis. However, unlike the conspiracy theory that Nemesis comes back to visit its sibling, bringing death and destruction in its wake on a kind of variable schedule, a press release about the finding states, quote, based on this model, the sun sibling most likely escaped and mixed with all the other stars in our region of the Milky Way galaxy, never to be seen again. Just like Ringo Starr's solo career. Hey, sexily named vegetables get ordered more than boringly named ones. That's what Boing Boing says. According to a study from psychologists at Stanford University, students bought and presumably consumed vegetables with more, quote, indulgent names than those with boring names. The psychologists held their study during an entire fall term. Each day at the cafeteria, the vegetable dish was labeled in one of four ways: a basic name, in the example given, just carrots, in a healthy restrictive name, carrots with sugar-free citrus dressing, a health positive name, smart choice vitamin C citrus carrots, and an indulgent name, with the example being given as twisted citrus glazed carrots. The breakdown of what people chose may surprise you. Indulgent names saw a 25% increase in selection over the basic name. 35% chose the healthy positive names over basic. But surprisingly, the winner was the healthy restrictive naming at 45%, which is interesting. I don't think there was actually a way for them to control for current eating trends, because they only did it for one fall semester, because I think that the health restrictive naming ties right in with current foodie preferences. And, you know, name choice influence could fluctuate over time, depending on the style of the time. But still, fascinating. There were two more indulgent names listed in Boing Boing's capsule of the article, both of which are actually making me hungry. Let me read them to you and see if you also get hungry. Dynamite chili and tangy lime seasoned beets and twisted garlic ginger butternut squash wedges. You know, but What the hell are twisted vegetables? Nah, enough with Earth-based food. I want to talk about food in space. Hey, guess what? Chicken sandwich. Kentucky Fried Chicken is sending a chicken sandwich into space. Briefly. And not really into space. But yes, that means that this story is yet another entry into the semi-regular show segment called Pizza Tech, where I tell you about fast food companies' attempts to use interesting and often bizarre high-tech gadgets and concepts to get you to put their food into your mouths. Zinger01, which you can read about on the internet at, and I'm not kidding about this web address, yes, we are actually sending a chicken sandwich to .space, although I read about it on space.com originally, is a co-branding marketing stunt meant to promote both KFC's new sandwich and more specifically Worldview Enterprises' Stratolite balloon system. The Stratolite doesn't actually go into space itself, but is designed to bring commercial payloads up to an altitude of 46 kilometers, which is 28.5 miles, and stay up there for weeks at a time, even months. They can also hover in one spot for that entire time, so they could possibly be used to monitor natural disasters, provide less expensive satellite-like imaging of a region, or even provide Wi-Fi connectivity to remote areas. I hope they set one up above Mount Hood National Forest. There is also a larger version called Voyager, which is designed to carry 5 to 6 human passengers on a journey up to about 32 kilometers, which, as we all know, is 20 miles, for $75,000 a seat. So what does KFC get out of this? Basically, lols. On Yes, We Are Actually Sending a Chicken Sandwich to .space, they make a big focus on the, quote, crew of their little module, their new chicken sandwich called the Zinger, and the vehicle in which the sandwich will be riding. In what I suspect is not an accurate representation of the sandwich container, a stylized chicken bucket with a bubble dome and satellite-like solar panels is depicted, complete with a robotic selfie arm, which will prove that the Zinger is in fact in space, a, quote, space tweet module that will receive your tweets if you use the hashtag ZingerSpaceTweet and then display them in the upper atmosphere for some reason, a gold cassette tape containing a recording of the actual Colonel Harlan Sanders talking about his famous Kentucky Fried Chicken, which is supposed to be a riff on the golden record on the Voyager space probes, and a coupon. The coupon will be dropped from a trapdoor on the bottom of the space bucket, but what the coupon is for and where it will end up is anyone's guess. The mission is kind of delayed right now. As of the time of recording this, it's about 58 hours away from launch, and it's already been delayed a couple times over the week, so I will update when it actually launches or not. We can send a chicken sandwich to space, but we can't enact an affordable universal health care plan. You know what's terrifying? Getting chased by gangs eager to steal your stuff. You know what's more terrifying? If that gang was actually a group of about 50 killer whales eager to steal your catch. That is reportedly what's been increasingly happening off the coast of Alaska to fishermen, according to iflscience.com. Now, this behavior has been reported since the 60s, but fishermen have been claiming that it has been getting worse and more frequently lately. A few thousand killer whales live in the waters around the Bering Strait and have been eating the black cod and halibut caught by longline fishermen and have begun recognizing when the fishing boats are around. They can even tell the boats apart simply from the sound of their engines, according to NOAA fisheries biologist John Morin. Robert Hansen, no relation, is the captain of the FV Oracle, one of these whale-identified fishing vessels. He claims that a pod identified and stalked him for 2 whole days. The pod tracked me 30 miles north of the edge and 35 miles west while I drifted for 18 hours up there with no machinery running, and they just sat with me, he wrote to the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. It's gotten completely out of control. On a separate occasion, he lost about 12,000 pounds of halibut and had to use 4,000 gallons of fuel to escape the whales. Other fishermen have noticed and reported that the killer whales have been bringing their young along with them on these stalking raids to teach them about the easy pickings. And attempts to get the whales to back off have been so far unsuccessful. They've tried using decoy buoys and heavy metal music, although since metal music attracts sharks, I don't see why it would repel whales, unless the thinking was that it would bring sharks in that the whales would be afraid of, but I don't think they're really afraid of sharks. Whatever. Possibly the only successful tactic to avoid being attacked by vicious gangs of killer whales is by trying to avoid them altogether. It's kind of hard to determine which part of the ocean is the equivalent of a dark alley, but maybe satellites could help. Satellites holding chicken sandwiches. The Southeast Alaska Sperm Whale Avoidance Project tags and tracks sperm whales, who incidentally also sometimes exhibit this fishing boat stalking behavior, via GPS tags and satellites, so it's entirely feasible to start tagging and tracking killer whales as well. Take that, Shamu. We've got technology. Now, I do have to disclose that my wife calls killer whales the jerks of the sea because of their jerkish behaviors. Specifically, they are not simply satisfied with killing and eating seals, but they feel compelled to fling the unfortunate seals around through the air before killing them, and then continue to fling the seal around after it has died from its injuries in some kind of sick game of catch before eventually consuming it. Killer whales, nature's jerk. Since it's almost July 4th, would you please rise for what I consider to be the national anthem? Oh, topical humor. Hi, everyone. Are you having a good time? I hope so. Want to keep the good times rolling? Then help me by supporting the show. You can do that by hiring me for some voice work and or production work. I can do voicemail messages, mediocre acting, bad singing, and some adequate audio production. If you feel you or someone you know might have a use for the best part of my body, which happens to be my voice and my brain, let me know. Email me at gary@pulpanddeckle.com. That is G-A-R-Y at P-U-L-P-A-N-D-D-E-C-K-L-E.com. Rates are reasonable. And/or you can rate and review the show on iTunes. The more ratings I have, the more I have at might show up as a suggestion for people looking for a tech podcast. And this one is different from all those other tech podcasts where white dudes talk about technology because I also talk about beer. And you can also support the show with real money. Yes, if you believe my 15 to 20 minutes of informative words about beer and technology is something you feel is worth at least $1 a month, that's kind of cool. And you can also become my patron at patreon.com/ihabitradio. That is patreon.com/ihabitradio. Just go to patreon.com/ihabitradio and join the very, very sexy and generous people that already support the show. And you can continue standing for the national anthem or not. I'm going to fade it out now. Yeah, I got a few things to tell you before I go for this week because my Citrus Safety Meeting double IPA is now done. It was so good. Oh, yeah. First, I'd like to promote two podcasts some dear friends are involved with. If you want to hear two very intelligent Boston metro area people named Andy and Ann talk about one specific thing, which could be a movie or a musical artist or historical facts, you should listen to Ann and Andy Dig at annandandydig.libsyn.com. That is annandandydig.libsyn.com. And if you like hearing people talk about movies with a dash of bawdy humor, and who doesn't, you should check out Film Dumpster at filmdumpster.com. And I'll spell that out for you, because I don't know if people can spell anymore. FILMDUMPSTER.COM. You can hear the sexy voice of friend of the show and multiple-time guest Tom Curley there. And you know what? Even my voice showed up on two episodes. Check it out. And some sad news. The requirements of my day job and my social life are pointing to the conclusion that I will only have enough time to deliver an 8-ounce episode next week. Sorry, but I have to work through the weekend, and I also have two friends' birthdays in that same time period, so I will be burning the candle at both ends and in the middle. I unfortunately have to make some compromises. Things sure would be easier if you become my patron at patreon.com/ihabitradio. Just saying. Anyway, please tell your family, friends, neighbors, plants, aliens, ghosts, but definitely not killer whales about the show, and that they can find it on Google Play Music, on iTunes, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and on Spreaker. And please send me feedback, story suggestions, and beer recommendations to Gary@pulpanddeckle.com, or on the Twitters and Instagram @iHabitRadio, or even on the Facebook @facebook.com/iHabitRadio. It's time for me to go. I will see you in the future. Bye-bye!